You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Miami has swept the Pacers, and there's still a lot to break down from that series, as well as looking ahead to a very likely matchup with the top seed of the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks. So to help me do just that is a beat reporter for the Bay Area News Group, the host of Locked On Warriors, and some guy who used to talk about the Miami Heat, none other than Wes Goldberg. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm great, and just excited to be back on Locked On Heat.
It's where you belong. No, not really.
But it's my comfort zone. I mean, I was tweeting during, like, look, the Warriors aren't in the bubble, so I'm using this opportunity to watch more Miami Heat games than I had during the regular season. And I just sort of started taking notes again. I started tweeting out my takes from every game and all these things. I'm like, oh, this feels right.
Yeah, it's I mean, I know there was some anti-West tweets earlier in the season when they claimed that you were bad luck in keeping the team down and everything else. Obviously not true, but it must be a little difficult that as soon as you go over to the Warriors, they have they have their worst season in a long, long time. So not an easy time for you, although you've got plenty of draft content to keep you occupied. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not untrue, right? Like, I can't prove that I'm not the problem. Like, I do stop covering the Heat. They get really good. I go to the Warriors, and they are the worst team in the league. Like, I can't prove I'm not the issue.
I guess that's fair. I mean, there's no way of really proving it. You know, they did make the playoffs while you were here covering the team. So I don't know if it's exactly your fault, but they are probably the best version of this team since you've been covering it. Well, maybe dating back to the last season of the Big Three era.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
That was a pretty good team, let's be honest. But the point is, they are good. Nobody expected them to be this good, I think. I had ideas that they would be able to get into the second round of the playoffs, so this is where we are right now. But let's kind of take a look back at what happened against the Indiana Pacers. A sweep. I did not expect that. I thought the Indiana Pacers would be able to get a little bit more out of their starters. I know they're not particularly deep. And as far as Miami was concerned, I had questions and concerns about how they'd match up against one of the league's best defenses. Didn't really seem to matter. The talent disparity was pretty obvious right along, and a four-game sweep, although each game was close, and I still don't think that Miami played particularly well. They were able to manage the four-game sweep. So what were your takeaways from that series? Because there's a lot to kind of look at, but I know you've been actively watching and taking notes, as you said.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you that they didn't look that good. I mean, some of the games were closer than you might have wanted. You know, Jimmy Butler didn't have a great game in that final game, but, you know, obviously he was injured. Duncan Robinson was kind of hit or miss. I mean, there were things, but they ultimately won every game. And among playoff teams, they have one of the best point differentials against their – and you look across the league and the Lakers lose in their first game against Portland. And you've got Milwaukee, who they're going to – the Heat are presumably going to play in the next round. They lose – their first game against Orlando. I mean, all these, like, the Heat are one of the few teams that, like Boston and Toronto, basically, that just went out there and took care of business. And it wasn't pretty all the time, but they got the job done. And I was really impressed with how they managed to stay in games, how they managed to pull out the games in the end. And to me, the takeaway was Spoelstra shortened the bench, right? He takes Kendrick Nunn out of the starting lineup. Myers Leonard isn't playing. He kind of takes, you know, going from 10 or 11 guys down to 9. And it was his best 9, and he gave the minutes to the right people, and I thought he managed the series really well. I can't really think of a thing that he did, maybe outside of playing Derek Jones Jr. maybe more than he should have, and I have some notes on him about that I want to get to. But other than that, I can't really think of anything Spo did to mismanage that series, and he kind of got Nate McMillan fired because he outcoached him so well. So I thought that they put the playoff team out there. They started Goran Dragic. Like I said, they shortened the bench. They still got all the contributions they needed from the starting lineup. The bench came in and took care of business for the most part. And then even when Indiana would get close, they only got close when, like, Goran Dragic or Jimmy Butler or Bam Adebayo were on the bench. And I just never worried about those games because I knew as soon as they came back in, the Heat were going to run away with it and pull away. And that's exactly what they did for four games straight.
See, but I don't know that. That's kind of, you don't want to necessarily be in close games with a team that's missing two of their key players. Like Sabonis is such a central hub on offense for that team, making the right passes, setting screens, spacing the floor to some degree. You know, an active rebounder. Miami, not a great rebounding team, and yet, especially with Myers Leonard out of the lineup, and yet they out-rebounded Indiana by a wide margin on every game. I know Miles Turner plays a little bit more out on the perimeter than your typical five, and the fit with Sabonis hasn't always been a seamless one. But I think that's where you start to see a lot more of the talent disparity that I'm talking about. These games should not have been as close as they were, at least in my opinion. Look, and I think Bam Adebayo said it even after the win or the game four win, that he knows that there's another level for this team to reach. And so while I'm watching these games, my feeling was they're playing good. They could play better, and they should not have kept it as close as they did. Look, Indiana, to their credit, they played their style, which is to bog things down a little bit, slow things down, and then, of course, play defense at a very high level. They did that for the most part. And then Miami's, like you said, when Miami's key players were on the bench, they come back in and they change the dynamic completely because they are so much better than what Indiana has to offer. I mean, you look at Indiana's bench. I mean, you got either one of the Holiday brothers. You got McDermott, who couldn't score a single bucket. I mean, he was woeful. And I can't think of a single other player out there. Oh, I'm sorry, Jakar Sampson.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I think you're right in losing and not having Sabonis and Oladipo being banged up and all those things. Like, yeah, maybe the Heat should have blown these teams out. But the strength of Indiana all season long has been their depth. And then you look at down the line who played well for them. You almost just got to give them credit for, like, sort of doing the next man up thing, I guess. Where Miles Turner had a great series. Like, I thought he played really well, at least
offensively. I wouldn't go that far.
Offensively, he was pretty good.
No, there were a couple games there where he was pretty bad.
No, you're right.
Yeah, the first two games. I think the second two games, maybe they kind of left him a little bit more space on the perimeter to see what he could do, and he was able to capitalize on some of those shots. I wouldn't have qualified it.
Fair enough, but, like, Malcolm Brogdon was awesome. You know, Jakar Sampson did stuff, and you don't really expect that to happen. Holiday was really good for them too. And I just thought that, you know, credit those guys for just stepping up and managing to keep the games close. But I do think, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I bet that Miami's starting lineup versus Indiana's starting lineup was kind of the blowout that you were looking for.
Oh yeah.
And to me, when you say that this team has a higher level to get to, I agree with you. I think certainly that's the point, because if Duncan Robinson can just not slump, and if they kind of figure out the right guys in this rotation, tighten it up a little bit more, and Jimmy Butler is healthy, and you give Bam Adebayo even more minutes, yeah, there is definitely another level for this team to get to, which is going to serve them well in the next series.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll definitely talk about the matchup against Milwaukee in the next couple of segments, but let's stick to the Pacers for now. What were your thoughts on Oladipo? Because, I mean, I had Caitlin Cooper of Indy Cornrows and Tony East of Locked On Pacers to talk about his impact. They were not as down. I think you get a glimpse of Indiana Pacers Twitter, and clearly the issue is Oladipo. He's costing the team. He's playing a lot of hero ball. They weren't necessarily as out on Oladipo as a majority of the Pacers Twitter. And of course that's with reason, because they cover the team and they know exactly what it takes. They knew he was not at 100%. He's struggling. I think the conversation moves now to whether or not Oladipo is still on Miami's radar and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other episode. But what were your thoughts on watching him play? Was it clear to you that he was not at 100%?
I mean, it was clear that he was not at 100%, but my general thoughts were, is Oladipo auditioning for the Miami Heat right now? Like, that is what I was thinking the entire time. And there was a couple times there where, like, he gets into a scuffle. I think it was with Bam Adebayo at one point. Like, they were like, they laughed it off. But then he kind of tapped Bam on the behind a little bit. And I was like, okay, like, you're trying to maybe
definitely
broke
friendly
friendship here. Yeah. And Bam, meanwhile, didn't do that. Like, he wasn't, like, angry with Oladipo, but he didn't go that extra step to you know, tap him on the behind or whatever. Just, like, Depot was doing that basically the entire game. I wonder if him going hero ball was him trying to prove something, like, hey, this is the sort of thing I can give you. He took a bunch of threes in that series. He's like, hey, I know you guys like these. I'm taking them. That's where my mindset was, honestly. He's only got a year left on his contract. Like, it's something I'm not gonna go so far as to say he's thinking about it during a playoff series. I do think that they needed that element from him. Like, it becomes hero ball only when you lose, right? Like, otherwise he's the savior, right?
Yeah.
If they win. So I don't have that much of a problem with how he played, but I kept looking for those little in-between moments, right? And there were several of them.
Yeah, no, it's absolute I mean, there, you can tell that there's an obvious connection there. I think it was after one of the seeding games where he's seen huddling up with Miami Heat players, specifically Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and I can't recall there was a third Heat player there. And so everybody kind of takes that snapshot, and already you start to hear the rumblings of him coming to Miami. And I mean, the fit, it's been a natural one there. You kind of brought up something that was a little bit interesting. I want to save that for the third segment. I know we talked about that before the show, a trade suggestion for Victor Oladipo that we'll certainly get into. But let's talk a little bit more about the Pacers series. We'll wrap that up in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Wes, I don't know about you, but one of the tastiest things I've ever tried over the last couple of months of this pandemic has been Built Bars. They're so good. They're the best tasting protein bar ever, and I cannot recommend them enough. I know you're a big fan as well. And now for our listeners, they have even more new flavors, 6 amazing new flavors to add to the 18 incredible flavors they already had. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia for a deadhead like me. That's something that I really appreciate. Lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. Those are amazing flavors to add to an incredible repertoire already, and they're so good for you. That's the whole thing about Built Bar, is that they are great for you if you want to lose weight or maintain weight. They're great for the health-conscious person. If you want a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber bar that's great for a keto diet, Built Bar is the one for you. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and you use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your next order. If you use the promo code LOCKEDON, that's $10 off your next order at BuiltBar.com. So make sure you try that out. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. We'll be bringing up a possible trade scenario for Victor Oladipo, as well as getting into some of the key thoughts about the Milwaukee Bucks as we gear up for a second round series against them. But we're wrapping up our talk about the Indiana Pacers with former Locked On Heat co-host Wes Goldberg. I know you had some thoughts about Derrick Jones Jr. you had mentioned in the first segment, so I'm curious to hear what those are.
Yeah, I just sort of have like a notebook dump that I want to get to here. First, before I get to the Derrick Jones Jr. thing, the closing lineup of Dragic, Hero, Butler, Jay Crowder, and Bam Adebayo, I think is an awesome closing lineup. And they found, and to me, what stands out about it is that they found a way to cover up for Dragic and Hero defensively.
They've been good.
They've been solid. Yeah, both of those guys try hard, but they can be taken advantage of just because of their size. You know what I mean? And against Indiana, they've got like Malcolm Brogdon's a big guy, and he had success against that point of attack, right? But that back line with Butler, Crowder, and Bam Adebayo is so good that it doesn't matter. It covers up for it. It's like the perfect balance of shooting and ball handling. Like Tyler Hero's inclusion in there is a stroke of genius from Spo, not only because of the trust in a rookie like Hero, but the amount of ball handling he provides, it's a stable amount of ball handling. He obviously has the shot-making ability, I think, is key for that group. And then particularly
Before you go on, though, I was just curious, because you covered a great rookie yourself in Eric Paschal there, but that's on a losing team that needs somebody to step up. And yet, when you see Tyler Hero fitting into a culture like Miami's, playing alongside a superstar in Jimmy Butler and an all-star level player in Goran Dragic, to me, it almost feels like his role is a little bit more difficult. It's not like you can just go and put up shots. You have to find your place so specifically. And I am so impressed by a rookie who's been able to hold his own, step up in clutch situations, and do everything he's done. Like, I don't know. I can't say enough about Hero and the fact that he does step up in these moments, because yeah, it's so great. And as, of course, you've got Kendrick Nunn too, who's played very solid over the year, even though he's fallen out of the rotation to some degree. But Hero in particular has impressed me.
Like, would you trade, what pick would you trade Hero for this year? Would you even trade him for number one? I would say no, right? In this draft, like, it's a weak draft. Hero is proven, and now he's proven it in a playoff series where the Miami Heat swept, that he could be a contributor. Absolutely. You compare him to a guy like Paschal. I don't, like, Eric Paschal is going to make probably the second all-rookie team, yeah. and he deserves it, no doubt. And he was definitely impressive, especially as a second-round pick. But I have no idea what his role going forward is on a good team. We know exactly what Hero's role going forward is, and that says a lot. Yeah. And then I mentioned Bam Adebayo before. Oof. And I'm not going to break news here, but he is so damn good.
He is.
Like, he is so good. And he's it was at one point it was regular season Bam, and you're like, okay, maybe he's taking the league by surprise. I'm not really sure how to deal with him. He's so athletic. He's such a great passer, all these things. But he's in a He's playing an Indiana Pacers team that has seen him like 100 times this year. They're in a playoff setting. The stakes are high, and he is as good, if not better, than he was. I mean, he had one dud, but if you take that dud out of the series, all of his averages were much higher than they were during the regular season, and that's what you want to see from a superstar player, right? Like an all-star player, you want to see them pick it up in the playoffs as opposed to, you know, maintain or take a step back when things get more difficult. And then you combine him with Jimmy Butler and Goran Dragic. Man, those are three, and I'm going to steal Draymond Green's thing here, but he calls them 16-game players. Those are three 16-game players. It's one thing to do it in the regular season. It's another thing to pick it up in the playoffs, and those three guys did it, and those are your three best players. So that, I thought, was huge for them. And then the Derrick Jones Jr. thing that I alluded to earlier. Of all the guys on the Miami Heat, he's the only player with a negative plus-minus. He was a minus 3.3 in the series. Everybody else was a positive plus-minus. And that was pretty apparent early on in game one of the series. It was apparent that when he was on the floor, and I like Derrick Jones Jr. I think he does some nice things, and his offensive rebounds are loud, and his dunks are loud, and it sort of detracts from all the things that he's not doing. Because when he's on the floor, they're basically playing 4-on-5. And I just don't know. Like, you can get away with it against Indiana. I just don't know if you're going to be able to get away with it against Milwaukee or if they move on from there. Like, I'm not sure. It's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. But he was just bad in that series, David. And I don't know. Like, he's the obvious weak link in that lineup, and that's why the Heat made the moves for Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder and guys like that, because they didn't want to rely on DJJ as the small forward or the power forward in small ball lineups so much. Yeah. And they haven't had to. And he sort of, and his minutes dwindled, and he sort of fell out of the rotation toward the end of the series.
You know, a lot of my feeling on Derrick Jones Jr. is that a lot of people have always liked him, especially because of his defensive prowess. And he's been used a lot, particularly during those stretches where Spo uses his zone defense a lot. And he thrives there. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how much of that is Derrick Jones Jr. thriving because of the zone defense, or the zone defense thrives because of Derrick Jones Jr. And I look at the accumulation of what he can and can't do, and I'm not convinced. Look, Derrick is a fine person in that locker room. I've said this time and time again. He's soft-spoken. He's a nice guy. I have no problems with Derrick Jones Jr., the person. It's the player that I see out there who continues to struggle with his shot, who doesn't do anything other than, again, as you said, loudly finish in traffic, have thunderous dunks on occasion, maybe pull down a couple of rebounds. But between how often he's injured, the fact that he doesn't shoot particularly well, I mean, we got a guy like Justice Winslow, who was a top 10 pick here and got crap for 3.5 years for being basically a better version of Derrick Jones Jr. than Derrick Jones Jr. And somehow Derrick can fly under the radar and he can't do anything wrong. And I don't understand why.
Yeah, I mean, he's got all the makings of a fan favorite, right? Because he rebounds, which, you know, my stance on rebounding, most overrated stat in the game. But fan, like, casual fans love rebounding. Like, oh man, he's trying hard.
And dunks.
Rebounding. They love dunks. And then they see how long he is. And I think his length is exacerbated by just the fact of how skinny he is. Right. And I love what you said there. I mean, not only are the rebounds and the dunks just like this loud, flashy thing, but it's that zone defense. He gets a lot of credit for it. I don't know that the Heat need him in the zone defense. Like you said, I think he needs the zone defense more than they need, than the zone defense needs him. I just, good guy to have on your roster. Good number 13, 14, 15th guy. But we're talking about the playoffs right now. And when teams aren't guarding him, and when he can't attack closeouts because he can't really dribble in a straight line, and when he is still small defensively, like, he is still a limited defensive player. He's a point of attack guy, despite them playing him at the four so often. I just don't know where you put him. And maybe he might be one of these regular season guys that's nice to have. But in the playoffs, when you're shortening your rotation, I think he's going to get squeezed out, is all I'm saying. And that's okay. This is the playoffs, and you've got guys squeezed out. You had Myers Leonard squeezed out. Kendrick Nunn got squeezed out. I think we're going to see Spo go to those guys against Milwaukee more than Derrick Jones Jr.
I think that's absolutely fair, and that's a good segue. I want to close out the Pacers thing on this note. I feel absolutely bad about the whole Nate McMillan thing. I know a lot of people are saying Miami beat the Pacers, and that's what led to his firing. I don't think that was the case. I think there are organizational dysfunctional issues there at play, and I don't think McMillan did a bad job. He had a limited team, and he did the best he could with it. I know some fans will always want coaches fired, but that's absolute scapegoat mentality. They've wanted Eric Spoelstra fired for years, and he's been a pretty good coach this season and over the last 10 years, so 12 years now that we think about it. But anyway, that's moving on for the Pacers. Looking ahead, the Milwaukee Bucks, here we are on a collision course. It always seemed like we would get to this point. Miami, one of the few teams to be able to knock off the Bucks during the regular season before entering the Orlando bubble. They've had some success. They made a midseason acquisition of Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala specifically with this in mind. And here they have that matchup that they probably are going to get. Let's just clarify that, because they are, as we're recording this, an hour or two away from a game of five against the Orlando Magic, when they'll probably wind up completing that series there. But just in case, we're not quite sure. Maybe Orlando has a miracle up their sleeve. Let's see. But the Bucks, I mean, I'm not sure what's next there. I know you kind of hinted at there, and I'm glad, because that seems like a pretty good segue, because I do feel like Nunn is probably going to get some playing time. And I actually think that Myers Leonard might get a little bit more. I mean, first of all, he didn't get any playing time against the Pacers, but that's a whole other story. Now that he's going up against the Bucks, and the fact that they have this incredible rim protector and a defensive player of the year candidate in Brook Lopez, who should have gotten much more recognition, I think he's a good addition to that starting lineup to space the floor a little bit, get Lopez away from the rim. You and I talked about this in the past week on Locked On NBA. What are your thoughts about Nunn and Lopez perhaps getting a little bit more playing time? I'm sorry, Nunn and Leonard getting a little bit more playing time in the series.
I think they're going to. I think Kendrick Nunn specifically could get more only if you basically take Derrick Jones Jr.'s minutes and give him to Kendrick Nunn. And you know, Milwaukee has a tendency to play small when they move Giannis at the five, so maybe you have an opportunity to play more guards there. But with Myers Leonard and Kelly Olynyk, obviously, those two guys should we might see a new starting lineup, right? Where
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, against Indiana, you're starting Bam at center with Jay Crowder at the four. You could maybe take Jay Crowder out or make some other sort of move where Myers Leonard or Kelly Olynyk is starting, because you want Brook Lopez spaced away. The Bucks this season have had a hard time guarding stretch fives. Now, Olynyk is a legit stretch five, so is Myers Leonard. And if he's going to have to go out on the perimeter and they have that pick and roll game and that pick and pop game with Goran Dragic, who is now your starting point guard, that could be devastating for Milwaukee's defense. And I'm still, honestly, like, I know Milwaukee is what they are. I know Giannis is going to win MVP. He's the defensive player of the year. Their plus minus, their point differential during the season was historically great. I get all of that stuff. I just don't trust them in the playoffs still. I'm just not all the way in on Milwaukee still. We have this poll for the Locked On Podcast Network about who we think is going to come out of both conferences. And I keep voting that the Celtics are going to come out, because I just think.
Really?
Or I did until the Gordon Hayward injury, but I wasn't picking the Bucks, and I just don't trust them, man. And look, I might be proven wrong. It's fine. I just, like, after Giannis, I'm kind of breaking down the numbers. I'm kind of going through the rosters here. I'm like, I think this series is going to be pretty even, and I really do. Like, this is a Heat team that sort of takes advantage of Milwaukee's one weakness. Milwaukee gives up the most three-pointers in the league. The Heat make some of they're among the top teams in the league in three-point percentage. And if you basically take their percentage and apply it to how many threes the Bucks give up on average per game, you're giving the Heat basically 15 three-pointers a game, which is equal to what the Houston Rockets and the Dallas Mavericks make every game. Historically great offenses, right? So you basically give them that rate of three-point percentage or that rate of making threes plus their defense, which has been awesome and historically good against Giannis. And all of a sudden, this is a really even, a close matchup. I really think that. And then on the flip side, like Milwaukee, they get a bunch of points in transition. Well, Miami has a great transition defense. And Milwaukee likes to shoot a lot of threes. Well, Miami has a better three-point shooting defense than Milwaukee does. I just think that there's so many reasons why you can sort of get down to it and say, this is going to be a really even series. And it really will just come down to, can Giannis get them a bucket, and can he just dominate in the moments where he needs to dominate? And I think the assumption would be yes, but before that, I think it'll be an even series.
Yeah, those are all really good points, and we'll probably get into a little bit more detail about that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Here with Wes Goldberg, former co-host of Locked On Heat, and now the host of Locked On Warriors, as well as a reporter for the Bay Area News Group, talking about the Miami Heat versus Milwaukee Bucks. Should be a really, really good series. Talking about some of the potential changes to the rotation and maybe even to the starting lineup, and how Milwaukee's tendency to give up threes will definitely benefit Miami. My concern there, Wes, and let me see how you think about this, is that they obviously give up threes to guys that they're not too concerned with. And as far as that is in the starting lineup, that's anybody but Duncan Robinson. You could give up threes to Goran Dragic. You can give up threes to Jay Crowder. That's probably likely to happen. And we'll see whether or not Myers Leonard or Kelly Olynyk is added to that starting lineup. But other than that, you want to make sure that you limit Duncan Robinson's looks. And so we already saw Indiana key in on him. And I'm not sure that anybody on Milwaukee's roster does what Justin Holiday was able to do so effectively against the Heat, which is, you know, just stick to Duncan for a couple of games there, limit his touches, make things uncomfortable for him. And while we did see Robinson get wide open looks and he just was not able to convert in games 1 and 4, I have some concerns about whether or not Milwaukee will be able to do the same, whether or not they'll be able to take Duncan out of the game and limit his impact, because so much of what he does makes things so easier for everybody else in that starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense if Milwaukee were to say, hey, Eric Bledsoe, just hound Duncan Robinson. Don't let him away from you. And Bledsoe's very good at that. He's got the long wingspan. He's very active. He could fight over screens. But what Miami does, I mean, they don't just move Duncan Robinson off of one screen or one pin down. They move him off of another one and another one and another one. And they just keep making him move. And Eric Spoelstra has designed this great offense. I don't think he gets enough credit for this, because it's not gimmicky like Mike D'Antoni or anything like that. It's an incredibly developed offense where oftentimes they're running staggered screens off the ball. And when you have that with guys who are all threatening as rim runners or three-point shooters or some combination of those guys, it can be really hard for a defense to make decisions. And you're forcing the defense to make decisions all the time. And what the point guard ends up doing, or whoever the ball handler is, and again, Miami has a lot of smart facilitators on that team, it's sort of like this it's kind of like a read option offense like we see in the NFL, right? Where, okay, if the linebacker or the defensive end does this, then I'm going to do that. And the Heat have kind of a similar thing going on where, okay, if the opponent sort of commits to the rim runner, then I'm going to kick it out to our three-point shooter or vice versa. And when you have Goran Dragic making that sort of decision, or Jimmy Butler or Bam Adebayo making those decisions, it could be devastating for a defense. And I know that the Bucks have this great vaunted defense, but they don't switch. They could struggle because of that, not switching, just because the Heat are able to create so much space with that screen and action game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good point. I think Wes Matthews probably starts off guarding Duncan. He's a little bigger than Bledsoe, and I think that's his role mostly to contribute that way defensively. But it's an interesting matchup is Goran Dragic versus Bledsoe then, because obviously former teammates in Phoenix, but so much of what you pointed out there makes a lot of sense as far as Miami's offense, constantly moving the ball, the quick back cuts, using Duncan as a screener. One of the evolutions of his game have been how he can play more off ball and doing everything that he does to still chip into the office and be a factor there. So that's going to be very, very interesting. And now that I think about it, I mean, Miami's lineup as currently their current starting lineup probably matches up pretty well with Milwaukee's. I mean, if you leave Jay Crowder out there, like, I mean, he can stay on Lopez. I think he can limit him to some degree. I mean, if you give up points to Brook Lopez, you give up points to Brook Lopez. That's not going to be the player who kills you for Milwaukee. It's going to be giving up points to Middleton or Giannis, obviously. So,
I'm not worried about Middleton, because the Heat have a bunch of guys that they could throw at him. I mean, Middleton's a fine player, but I'm never that like, he's not a guy that like strikes fear into the defense. I think the Heat have enough guys that they could throw at him. My question to you is, if this is as even as you and I both think it is, there's one distinct advantage, I should say, for each team. For Milwaukee, it's obviously having Giannis. Their best player is Giannis. Miami's best player is Jimmy Butler. Whatever that gap is, is that bigger than the gap between Eric Spoelstra and Mike Budenholzer? Because that's Miami's biggest advantage. And I know that Budenholzer is a former coach of the year, and I get it, but he has historically not adjusted well in the playoffs. He is slow to make adjustments. He is slow to recognize what the other team is doing, to recognize what he has to do to counter that. or if he's at least slow, if he's not slow to recognize it, he's slow to take any action about it. And Spoelstra, meanwhile, is ready to just make adjustments possession to possession, let alone game to game. And he's probably, I would say, the best in the league at making playoff adjustments, and I think he's proven that since the Big Three era to now. So Spoelstra, playoff Spoelstra versus playoff Budenholzer versus playoff Giannis and playoff Jimmy Butler, I do wonder how big of a gap there is.
I think it's actually even, to be honest with you. I think Spo obviously clearly better than playoff Budenholzer. At the same time, I also have concerns about Jimmy's health. I think right. that shoulder is going to be a problem in the series. If, you know, he'll be ready to play in game one, unless he loses that arm over the next couple of days. And even then, I still think that he'd play out there. I just think it's going to be a lingering issue, just like his wrist, as he already took a hard fall against the Pacers, and that wrist has been something that's bothered him all season long, which is why his shooting has been as problematic as it has. He's still able to get to the line, but I wonder whether or not he's going to continue to get those easy trips to the free throw line the way he did against Indiana. I think that the refs will probably give a little bit more respect to Milwaukee defenders, and if that's the case, he's not going to be able to get 20 trips to the free throw line the way he did in game three against Indiana. That's just not likely to happen. So I'm not sure. I'll be honest with you. I think Antetokounmpo is the better player, obviously. I don't think that's any knock on Jimmy whatsoever, but I just think it's a lot more even than you might think. It's still going to be a hell of a series. There's so much mm-hmm. that could break down there. And I'm glad I'm going to be able to talk to some Bucks people over the next couple of days to see what their thoughts on, because obviously they cover that team more closely. They can anticipate the kind of changes that we might be able to see. I think, from what I've seen and heard, Budenholzer has been able to make some adjustments during the Orlando Magic series. I think he still needs to be tightening his rotation to some degree and playing more minutes for key players like Middleton and Antetokounmpo. But either way, they've been able to distance themselves after a surprising game one loss. But I know your time is precious. I didn't want to hold you for too long, but I did want to touch on a trade scenario that you brought up to me via text yesterday. So why don't you clue my listeners in on what you were thinking as far as a potential trade for Victor Oladipo?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Oladipo's name is in like the trade rumor mill right now with the Pacers being eliminated. And look, it makes sense, right? Like, he's only got 1 year left on his contract. I don't think he's really a part of Indiana's long-term plans, not only because they're not sure if they're going to re-sign him. Yeah, like, he's going to leave as a free agent. So they're building around T.J. Warren, Malcolm Brogdon, and Domantas Sabonis. And so it makes sense for them to trade him. I think he's probably a likely guy to get moved this offseason. And the Heat, there's obviously a connection there. We talked about it. Oladipo trains in Miami over the summer. He has a connection with Dwayne Wade. So I think Miami's team building strategy is just to take anybody who's friends with Dwayne Wade and put him on the roster.
Makes sense.
It's not a bad deal. I mean, Bradley Beal is a friend of Dwayne Wade's too. So that's fine. And Oladipo 2 years ago, I think it would have taken, I argue he was a top 15 player. I don't think he is that right now. I don't know what he is. When he's healthy, it's hard to tell, but he had a down year, obviously, because of health reasons. But is it even worth trading Tyler Hero for Victor Oladipo? What the trade really would be Hero and Andre Iguodala's contract, right? That's how you get the money to work. And Oladipo is at $21 million a year next or for next year. So that would be how it would work. But really, you're not losing much with Iggy. You figure that he'll not be around for a long time. The deal really is Tyler Hero for Oladipo. I don't know that you do that, all things considered. If you're the Heat and you want to maintain flexibility in 2021, Tyler Hero's a smaller contract. He's a potential building block for a trade package if you want to go that route, obviously, like in this situation or maybe another one. But it's worth exploring, right? I mean, Oladipo right now is still a better player than Tyler Hero. So I don't know. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Oladipo for Hero and Iguodala.
No, I don't think so. And look, it's a team option for the second year of Iggy's deal. Obviously, they extended him when they acquired him with a trade deadline. I think the assumption is that they'll be able to opt out of that deal and let him either retire or sign with the Warriors for one last year there while they make another title run in a couple seasons. I don't know if you necessarily want to give him up because he's been valuable. And as far as Hero, obviously, as the main piece of that trade, I think he's got a couple of all-star selections in his future. And I like his ability to continue to adapt. If you look at his game and what his weaknesses are, obviously it's on the defensive end, but he's 20 years old and he doesn't have much collegiate experience other than one season at Kentucky. He's been pretty good as a rookie for Miami. I think given the time, the effort, and the concentration, the player development, that the proven player development from this franchise, I think we can start to see him reach another level. And if that's the case, why isn't his ceiling as high as Victor Oladipo's currently is, and maybe even higher? And that's that's my thought process. So I don't know why you'd want to give up on a guy like Hero.
No, but another thing too is that you probably don't have to. Like, you're going to have all this cap space in 2021 where, all right, go chase Giannis, and plan B or C might just be Victor Oladipo, and you just – he's going to want to sign with Miami. Oladipo's number one choice is going to be Miami. I'm not reporting that, but I know that, right? Everybody knows that. Yeah. And so if he's available, which he will be, and Miami has the cap space, which they will have, unless they sign some other better player, then they can have Oladipo and Tyler Hero. So, yeah, I wouldn't do it either. But the only reason you would be, okay, Jimmy Butler's older. We feel like this is our title window. Let's just go ahead and make this move now. But I don't think it would be for Oladipo. If they were going to move on from Tyler Hero, it would be for some other player, like a Bradley Beal.
Okay, I wanted to bring that up. Now rank these players, because I know you love this sort of stuff.
Yes.
Victor Oladipo, Bradley Beal, Donovan Mitchell. Who does Miami acquire in ranking order?
Oh, you would go Mitchell first, then Beal, and then Depot.
Yeah. I still bring it up. I was just watching that first game one performance from Mitchell in the playoffs, and I just looked over at my wife, who she saw that something was going on. I was just like, man, he was right there. I know the theoretical. I know you and I were covering that draft very intently, and we were drooling at the pie. I remember texting and thinking Mitchell. Yep. Yeah, we were like, oh man, Mitchell's gonna slide. I can't believe it. And then effing Denver ruins everything and trades that pick.
Well, I mean, and the reason is because, I mean, I think right now Bradley Beal is a better player than Donovan Mitchell. I mean, this is a guy who in the regular season, I know it was for a bad Wizards team, but scored 30 points per game at a good percentage. He's a better defender than people think. He's actually a much better playmaker than people think. Like, he can run pick and roll for you and do those things. But here's the problem: if you acquire Bradley Beal, what's his ceiling realistically? I think it's, you know, maybe a top 11, 12 type of player. Maybe just in a given season, he can maybe be the 9th or 10th best guy in the league. It's pretty much Jimmy Butler's ceiling, I think, is Bradley Beal's ceiling.
Yeah.
And if you're the Heat, and historically, to win a championship, you need kind of a top 5 guy. And I don't know who on the Heat right now has the ceiling of being a top 5 guy. And that, to me, is what's interesting here. Jimmy Butler is undoubtedly the alpha dog. But if they're going to win the championship, I don't know that he could be their best player. Just given on how historically teams have won championships and what Kawhi has done to build around himself and LeBron is doing to build around himself and all these other players, like what Giannis is doing with Milwaukee and Kevin Durant with the Brooklyn Nets are going to be a factor next year too. I think the Heat are going to need that extra level of player, and it's going to have to be a player who complements both Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo well, because I think Bam at this point is untouchable in any trade. He is a core part of your championship team, so to trade him would be taking a step back, regardless of who you got.
Right.
So with Bam and Jimmy, if those are two of your top three guys, well, then that third guy needs to be a floor spacer. He needs to be a three-point shooter and presumably a ball handler too, somebody who could do some stuff. And that's why I go to like a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who isn't the floor spacer that Beal is, but he's certainly a ball handler. That three-point shot is coming along. What he could do defensively has been very impressive so far, at least in flashes. And what his upside is his ceiling is definitely higher than Beal's. Like, there is a chance that Mitchell in 2 or 3 years becomes a top 5 guy. Now, I'm not sure he gets quite there, but at least there's a chance, whereas Bradley Beal, I don't think there's even that opportunity. And that's what leads me to this next option, David, something I've been thinking about.
Okay.
The obvious kind of upgrade point on this team, I think, is point guard. Goran Dragic is not getting younger. They supplanted Kendrick Nunn for Goran Dragic in the starting unit, which shows to me that position is at least shaky. They do like having Dragic at the very least coming off the bench in the best role, especially as he ages. He's going to play that bench role. I think ultimately he probably has a future with Miami just as on a new contract, and after they have his bird rights, et cetera. They can re-sign him to a smaller deal, longer terms. But things don't look great in Portland right now, David.
Oh, I'm all aboard a Dame Lillard Express. Bring that guy over here.
I know what it takes to get him. It probably takes everything on the roster and every draft pick you ever have. You would basically have to do – you'd have to clean house the way the Heat cleaned house to get LeBron and Chris Bosh. But you would keep Jimmy, you would keep Bam, and you would trade everybody else it took to get Damian Lillard. And even then, I'm not sure it's enough to make it happen. No. But if I'm Miami, that's the guy I'm going for, because that is definitely a top 5 or 6 guy. He makes you a championship caliber team right away. He spaces the floor the way Steph Curry does. You can imagine him playing with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. That's probably the best trio in the NBA.
Yeah. I think that's pretty fair. I mean, just if you get excited now, Heat Nation, for watching Tyler Hero pull up for jumpers, just wait till you see Dame Lillard do it from 40 feet out every once in a while. I mean, that's as exciting as it gets. I'm all aboard that idea. I was thinking about Mitchell. I was like, yes, he's Dwayne with a 3-point shot. And then you throw Dame Lillard in there. I'm like, okay, Lillard one for sure. 1B, maybe 2A. Mitchell, and then everybody else after that. So that if you're going to rank trade acquisitions, that's it. I know somebody asked me recently about Joel Embiid. I don't think that's a likely one, despite the connection with Jimmy Butler there. But all good stuff, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Why don't you tell my listeners where they can follow you and your great work?
Oh, just follow me on Twitter at WC Goldberg. If you're interested in listening to some draft coverage, listen to Locked On Warriors, where we're breaking down a bunch of draft picks over the next few weeks. And then obviously tune in, if you're not already, to Locked On NBA on Tuesday, where David and I talk every week.
There you go. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. I'm David Ermil. Thank you so much for listening and for your support.